kids that come to our camp, you know, I tell them, I'm like, look, if we're in there to see you, we watch you from the second you get out of your car, the second you get back in your car. You know, we're watching how you treat your parents. We're watching what you do pregame. We're watching what you eat at the concession stand. You know, all those things, they're all important.
No good player has ever said, well, who else is going to be the shortstop? The best players just say, sign who you want. I'm going to beat them, right?
And the other thing for baseball players, if you want to be a great baseball player and play at the highest levels, then be an athlete first.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Corner podcast, where the coaches hang out with Walter. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Baseball Blue Book. If it has to do with baseball, it has to be in the book. The question for you, are you in the book? Now let's join our host, Walter Beattie.
Hello and welcome. This is going to be a special edition today, and I can tell you absolutely proof positively that I am excited to have this discussion today. And as many of you know, Coach Serrano is in season with Johnson University. So, you know, his time is precious. They're traveling over the weekend. And today, our guest is going to be someone who I've had tremendous respect for over two decades. You know, and I get a lot of emails and messages about my disdain for travel baseball, and nothing could be further from the truth. And so I thought I would reach out to someone that I consider to be one of the founding fathers of what we refer to today as travel baseball. And that is Andy Parton with the Dirtbags. I don't know, Andy, if we're called the Evo Dirtbags, the Dirtbags, help me, but thank you for joining us today and welcome aboard, Captain.
I'm fired up to be here. It's just Dirtbags is good.
Dirtbags.
Yeah, this will work out good because I just got off Joe Rogan's podcast, and I've got a Caleb Presley Sunday conversation coming up. So it's fitting that we're doing this now.
Right, so I'm going to help you prepare for your upcoming podcast. But, you know, Andy, I really want to start this whole thing by talking about you have been around since what I call the birth of travel baseball. Take us back to what made you start the Dirtbags and kind of talk to us a little bit about what it used to be back in the origins of your days with travel baseball.
Yeah, I just got into it. Well, I started coaching at 18, and I just really enjoyed coaching. So then I started something. Well, let me go backwards a little bit. The guy I was coaching with in high school, he sent me a message, and you'll remember this, Team One.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff Spellman and Anoop Sina, and this is probably a lot of your listeners don't remember them, but they were like the earliest ones. I know Perfect Game was doing some stuff back then. I don't know that it was more than a tournament at that point, but I just don't remember. But he sent me something about Team One, and it was a kid on our team that we coached in high school, and he was listed in the North Carolina section of prospects, and they had a little blurb about him. And I thought, man, that is super cool. You know, I think that's really cool because, hey, I coached that kid. You know, we all want a little piece of that. And so at the time, I was living in Greenville, North Carolina, you know, one-bedroom apartment, and I was going to Pitt Community College. I was going to be a teacher. I was going to be a coach. That's what I wanted to do. And so I started a publication called Carolina Prospects. I don't want to take up too much of your list. I don't bore everybody, but I did Carolina Prospects, and I did the same thing as Team One, but it was just for kids that I knew. And I listed kids, and back then there was no social media. This is 2001. So it was no social media, but there were chat boards. Do you remember Baseball Web? Is that what it was called?
Baseball Web.
Yeah. I don't know if they're still around or not, but that was kind of where all the eyeballs were. And so I didn't know what that was. Somebody shared that with me, but I'll try to go a little faster here. But so we started, you know, tried to learn as much as possible, you know, through that, kind of like what's going on. So I had this Carolina Prospects thing, and we did a showcase. You know, I didn't know what that was. I had to go to the state games in North Carolina just to watch what a pro style workout was in 2000. And I didn't know any college coaches at that time. And so I met a couple of guys and told them what I wanted to do. And they said, man, go for it. And that's kind of how it started. Then it kind of grew legs, you know, became impact baseball. But the coaching side of it, you know, came next. It was the next year in 2002 when I started the Dirtbags. And, you know, I've always loved coaching. You know, obviously I love baseball. And it was like, how can I continue to do this? So I'm riding around. I'm watching over 150 games in the spring. So I'm identifying a ton of players to put on my list. And so I've got this long list of, like, good players. And back then there was no teams. There was no tournaments. There was no teams. There was nothing. I'm like, well, outside of the Greater Raleigh Fall Baseball League, maybe somebody from that area would remember that name, Ken Shuey. Paul Shuey's dad ran that. But outside of really nothing in the state, there was a guy named Lou Weatherspoon and a guy named Freddie Suggs. Shout out to those guys. They were before me. And then Mike Schilt and I kind of came on board. Mike Schilt's the manager of the Padres, for anybody that doesn't know. He had On Deck. And we kind of started at the same time. I had this list of kids, so I invited these kids to come play. And they, you know, it was very easy. All of them said yes. There was no teams. So everyone was looking to play. Adam Warren, who played in the major leagues for years, you know, with the Yankees, look him up. He was on that first team. He wasn't even going to play. I had to talk him into playing fall baseball. Like, nobody even played fall baseball back then. So that was so much fun. You know, Cameron Maben was on that team. He's a longtime big leaguer. So we had some really, really good players, but there was nobody to play. And to kind of answer your question earlier, like, what's the difference? There's so many teams today. Back then, there was no teams and there was nowhere to play. So I had to start my own tournaments. So, but you're like, okay, let's go play games at North Carolina and Duke. But there's no teams. So once we started having some success, I put it online on our website. I mean, as far as I know, I'm the first person to start, promoting players online, you know, through a website. And I started, kind of recognizing, you know, guys' accomplishments and things like that. And then it kind of slowly, you know, here comes another team. Okay, cool. Now we got some teams to play. So that's kind of how it started. But, you know, bottom line, I love helping people. And if I can do that through baseball, you know, then that's great. And that's kind of what I've been doing for 20 plus years now. But I love baseball. I love helping kids, you know, and been successful at it, you know, up to this point.
Well, I mean, one of the biggest topics that I really want parents to understand is kind of what you just alluded to. Really mid 2000s, say 4 or 5, is really when the ramp up began with regard to Andy Ford, the Ford family, Jerry Ford, you know, them looking in saying, okay, we got to get these tournaments together. But really during that time period of 05 through 2015, would you agree that travel baseball back then was really the elite of the elite from East Coast to West Coast? And that's really where the college coaches began to kind of navigate their way to find themselves at those games, right? That was kind of the mecca at that point.
100%. I remember in 05 and 06, you know, we went to Atlanta to the WWBA. It was right. Like 40 teams, but all the teams were good. Right. You know, I remember going to the underclassmen for, you know, in Fort Myers back in, I think it was 04 or 05. Again, it's like 40 teams. You know, we went back-to-back years of finishing in the Final Four, you know, in Jupiter and in Fort Myers with those teams that we had. So but it was the elite. It was the best of the best. There was no, you know, now you go to these tournaments and they've got 300 or 400 teams in there. And you're really, you know, they've got, it's kind of a disaster. I don't want to get too far into right. it, but the team-wise, you know, there's so many teams that really have no business playing somebody, you know, like an ABD of back in the day.
Right. When
those teams were stacked. You know, right. Could you imagine one of these C-level teams playing that team? Nothing's getting accomplished, you know, but yeah, it really was awesome back then. And now you've really got to weed through, you know, so many teams, and they just keep popping up. You know, it's people like us, you know, that have been around, that kind of withstood the test of time, you know, just throughout the years, you know, we're still here. you know, but there's a lot of new teams that pop up and, you know, a lot of them kind of fizzle out. But I think the intentions are good. I think most people, they actually want to help kids. You know, they just don't know how. And there's really not but so many organizations in the country that really do a good job, you know, that can actually help kids.
So I want to kind of expand on that point. So my point, when I'm talking with parents, if we take all 50 states and we put all the high school student athletes, there really are only maybe, you know, let's call it 50. And that's being really, you know, I would say, you know, I'm being generous there. 50 programs that have the ability to not only work with and develop, but to offer candid, honest feedback, which is really important when you're talking about student athletes that have a desire to be a participant at the college level.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What exactly was the question? I'm sorry.
So I wanted to kind of expand upon the point that not every travel program help a student athlete playing college.
What we were talking about before we started recording was you've got so many organizations out there that they want to tell mom and dad and the kid what they want to hear, you know, to try to get them on board. And then once they get them on board, you know, maybe they're not always telling them exactly what they need to hear because they want to try to keep them. Now, I respect that, you know, they're trying to, you know, from a business standpoint, we don't want to start, you know, having a bunch of churn, losing kids. That's not a good look. And it, you know, it hurts, especially if you've got employees and things like that. But, you know, you've got to be honest with people. And I think in the long run, that's why we're still here. And that's why certain organizations are still here, because we, you know, we are truthful, you know, and we do offer good advice and we do educate. And, you know, we're constantly learning, you know, and we've got to continue to adapt. You know, obviously the rules are changing in college baseball and the recruiting. I love the new rule now, you know, with kids not being able to basically get recruited until, was it August 1 of their junior year? Wonderful. Wonderful. And I've got a son that's a 2027. Now, you know, I think one day he'll probably get recruited. So, but it's great from a parent standpoint. Now I can see it like, well, you know, my kid can barely talk to adults. You know, a lot of these kids I'm coaching at 15 years old, I mean, they have trouble talking to adults. You know, I'm not saying anything bad, but they're just young, you know? So, you know, we try to help them with that type of stuff. So I can't imagine, you know, my son trying to talk to, you know, a bunch of college coaches and make this tough life decision, you know, at 14, 15 years old, but it has happened over and over again. So, I'm sorry, I kind of got off track there, but yeah, I mean, I think there's, you know, a lot of these guys that, you know, they want to help people. They just, you know, they just don't know how.
So talk to me a little bit about your development process. I mean, how, you know, for the amount of games that you play, talk to us about the Dirtbag development model, as far as what you're providing for student athletes and families with regard to really understanding what it truly takes to be a college caliber student athlete.
Right. So people ask us all the time, you know, the younger people, 14 years old, where do we practice? Well, you know, we don't have team practice during the week, you know, as an organization the size of ours, because our kids are so spread out. We don't have like a pocket, you know, and we got all our kids are from Greensboro. You know, that's just not how it works. You know, we may have kids from Asheville to Wilmington, North Carolina, on the same team. So kind of our process, and we've done a lot of trial and error over the years. You know, we'll try this, we'll try this, we'll try that, just to see what works. Now, it's got to be a blend. And this is, you know, my opinion, and this is kind of what we do. It's got to be a blend of development, you know, obviously the exposure side. We like to have some experience in there. And then obviously we got to have the competition. So we like to do the development side. We have to go play some organized games. Okay. And if you ask mom and dad and the kid, what do you want to do? You know, it's not necessarily what they need to do. It's what they want to do. Hey, let's just go play straight perfect game and PBR tournaments. That's it. Well, you know, and those guys have done a good job of marketing, you know, to the fact that, hey, you know, this is how you get seen. This is how you get better because of the social media recognition and things like that. It's not necessarily true. All right. We know. So there's got to be a blend of like what they want and then what they need. So it's our job to kind of put that together. Now, like I said, first, you know, there's got to be the development side. We have to play organized games. And these aren't the sexiest things. You know, this is not, you know, where we go, you know, tee it up and try to win, you know, a tournament or something. We're going to go play games that I'll just name a school, Virginia Tech. Okay. Right. So we'll go to Virginia Tech and then we'll go take batting practice on the field. You know, we'll do like a college round. We'll introduce them to like base running. We'll do situational hitting. You know, we're doing a lot of things that you would do at a quote unquote team practice. All right. We'll take IO and then we'll play a 9-inning game. And this is where we're able to get our guys some steady, consistent work. You know, if I just go try to play, that's why I tell parents to, you know, if we go try to play nothing but championship style tournaments, I'm only going to develop, you know, maybe what, 9, 10, 11 kids. But if we've got 15, 16 kids on the team, I've got to have everybody, you know, developing. So one example would be if you've got a, you know, at a younger age, 14, 15 years old, and you've got a 6'4" right-handed kid that's throwing 88 miles an hour, right? But kind of sprays it, doesn't throw a ton of strikes, developing breaking ball, just doesn't like really help you quote unquote win because he's going to spray it. He's going to walk guys. He's going to pitch in trouble, but he's the guy that needs the consistent work. You've got to run him out there consistently. Now, if I'm trying to just win, I'm going to throw, you know, the undersized guy that's 5'9", peppers it in there, 78, 81, throws nothing but strikes, but he's a second baseman. You know, so what am I doing? I'm developing a second baseman pitcher, and he's got no upside on the mound, you know, for college baseball. But that 6'4" kid, you know, who throws 88, he's the guy that's got to have that development, and he doesn't get that on, you know. So the elite teams that are selling kids, selling teams, you know, like, hey, all we do, you know, we only play perfect game, we only play PBR. Okay, well, look at the stats. How often did that guy pitch? He ain't getting any better. Because he's not pitching, because he's not helping you win. I know you like him because he throws 88 and he's a big, tall kid, but you're not helping him, all right? So there's got to be that development side where we're getting consistent work. You know, all our catchers are catching all our pitchers. You know, we're moving guys around the infield. We're teaching our guys, you know, we can stop the game. If something happens during the game, we can stop it, you know, just like in college. This is what they do. And I know this is not like, you know, tournament baseball where the parents can sit back and just be entertained. You know, like, this is not what we're trying to do. We're trying to make our kids better. All right. So we can do any of that stuff but we're also getting that next phase of that exposure. All right. So we're playing these games at college fields. We're taking the batting practice. We're doing all this stuff at college fields. So we're getting development, you know, they're getting exposure. And they're also getting some experience, man. Dude, we're taking pictures of the guys, you know, like it's a fun thing to do. So mom and dad, man, they can sit back at Virginia Tech. I know I just keep using them as example. They can sit back at Virginia Tech and look at this wonderful facility. And now guess what? You can take this as an unofficial visit. You know, the coaches are, you know, they're able to kind of show us around the facility a little bit. You know, our parents and our players can ride around, look at campus, you know. And then obviously, you know, after that, we've got to go play, you know, we got to test it. What is what we're doing working? So we got to go play in some of these bigger tournaments. And that stuff is fun. You know, so we get excited about that. The coaches, the parents, the players, everyone gets fired up to go try to win some sort of championship. But we can't do that every single weekend. Doesn't it kind of lose its luster? You know, if we're trying to play for, you know, I don't think it's right that we could be the world champ every weekend. I think that's dumb.
I agree. Oh man, I could spend hours on that topic. One of the things I would love for you to kind of share, Andy, is truly your interactions with college coaches, because at the end of the day, parents and student athletes, they're all chasing, you know, what I call the golden carrot of college baseball. Can you just talk about that transition from the high school / travel ball ages into college and how truly challenging it is for student athletes from an athletic and a mental standpoint, as far as that getting over that big hurdle to being an active participant at the college level?
Hang on, all right. That was a lot of different parts. So which one do you want to answer?
Anything about how hard it is to play in college?
Yeah, sure. Well, you got to look at it. You know, you try to educate mom and dad and a kid on, look at the statistics. You know, how many pitchers are actually pitching? I'm not going to name any schools now, but pick an SEC or an ACC school and look at the distribution of innings. How many guys are actually pitching? You know, what do you do that, you know, do you even compare to that guy? I mean, I know kids right now that are freshmen in college. They don't have an inning yet, pitchers. They don't have an inning yet. Well, you know, instead of like feeling sorry for yourself and going, should I talk to the coach about it? Look at the guys who are pitching. This is what I'm telling them. Look at the guys who are pitching. What are they doing better than you? You know, they're doing something that you can't do or something that you did really bad, right? I know you got an opportunity. You know, you just didn't succeed in that. So college baseball, it's just getting harder and harder, you know, especially for a high school kid. You know, when I talk to college coaches, you know, as far as like recruiting, they're more focused now than ever on their incoming class because, you know, with the portal and then, you know, the train, all this stuff, it's really changed the dynamic of college baseball. If it's better or worse, I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. It's just like markers and crayons, man. Like we just, you know, we're, you know, it's just tools, right? So we've got to adapt. And so now I look at it, you know, as a parent, you know, as somebody who helps guide a lot of people through this process, you know, yeah, man, you know, if they get this kid that, you know, August 1 of this year, that's a 2025, if it works out, it works out. Awesome. If it doesn't work out, guess what? You know, they'll go find somebody else. And what I don't think people understand is college baseball is a business. This is big money business for certain organizations. I mean, certain programs. You know, this is their life. This is their job. It's their job to win. You know, and that's what people don't look at. You know, I always wanted to go play at this school. Well, that's my son. I love my son. Well, he should be able to go play at this school. No, everybody wants to go play at that school. You know, so what are you doing better? And I think we talked about it earlier was people just don't realize the work that it takes, the consistent work that it takes for you, the player, but you, the parent, you know, like you've got to be so proactive in this process. I think everyone's just relying on their coach or their team to get better. You know, if you're going to team practice to get better individually, man, you're in trouble. Okay. Team practice is team practice. It's your coach's job. You know, he's trying to bring the team together, do some team stuff, get some reps, whatever. But if like all you're doing is team practice, man, you're going to get passed. You're going to get left behind, you know? And like, I try to preach to my own son, you know, like it's raining outside. Awesome. Good. We're going to get ahead of somebody today. This is what we're going to do. You know, we're going to go inside today. We're going to do this. We're going to work out this, you know, and obviously I've got an indoor place sitting here behind me. You know, people will say, oh, well, you've got that. Well, I positioned myself to do that. You know, I didn't go buy a car. You know, right. I didn't go buy a watch. I didn't go to that vacation. I made sacrifices to put myself in this position, you know, for my kid. You know, obviously everybody else can come in here and use it. But, you know, so people just, you know, they just don't understand how hard it is, you know, to be. Obviously, you can probably get there, but like staying there is even harder. You know, once you get to college, like staying there and then because they're always looking for somebody better and people don't understand that college, that's their job. You know, it's everybody's job. You know, if you're the boss, you're always looking for better talent. You're looking for better employees. You're always trying to be better. And that's what these college baseball coaches are doing, too. You know, but I really think I know this is probably something you didn't really ask me, but I really think the college programs today that are really adapting to the recruiting side of things and the development side of it. I think there are some programs out there that kick ass in the recruiting side, but they don't develop. And there's some that aren't as good recruiting that do a kick-ass job of developing. You know, I think if you look at programs, and I'll shout out like Duke, I mean, look what Duke's done. Unbelievable. You know, like they have taken obviously the development side to a whole new level. Look at their staff. Look what their staff's doing. I mean, Dusty Blake's the pitching coach in the big leagues. I mean, he was just at Duke not too long ago. I mean, so you think about like what schools like Duke are really doing. They're changing the game, you know, and they're changing recruiting, and everybody else, they're forcing them to get smarter, which is great. It's good for baseball, you know. So
I agree with that 1,000%. What would you say the biggest difference between Dirtbags 2014 and Dirtbags 2024? What's the biggest difference in travel ball today versus 10 years ago?
I would say this sounds dumb, but maybe not dumb, but I think there's less distractions. There was less distractions then. I don't think, you know, when you hear kids in a dugout today, they're constantly comparing themselves to somebody else.
Bingo.
Somebody, yeah, because of social media, you know, you take organizations like PG and PBR, and there's nothing wrong with this, but they hype up, you know, certain kids or whatever, or the best players. And so your good player, he's comparing himself to them. And I just, you know, I'll hear guys, you know, we'll be at a complex and I'll hear guys around the cage like, hey, did you see so-and-so just walk by? Hey, did you see so-and-so just walk by? It's like, man, you're good too. Like, what are you like? We're gonna like idolizing 15-year-olds, right? You know, and that's only through social media. You know, in 2014, that wasn't a thing. And, you know, I don't want to say kids were tougher or more talented or whatever. I would say this. The training is more specialized today. I don't know what it's going to do long term for guys, but guys definitely throw harder today than they did back then. I would say guys are bigger and stronger. There is more emphasis on the weights and things like that. And that's because, again, it's through social media. You've got more and more people posting stuff about training, and there's so many people out there who are great at, you know, helping develop kids, and they're pumping out, you know, just like you are. I mean, they're pumping out information, you know, to people, to parents, to players, you know, to continue to get better. So I think the information is certainly more in abundant, but also better information. You know, the training, everyone's getting smarter today.
Last question, if you had the ability to make a change or a couple of changes that you think would benefit the sport, what would you like to see happen or change within youth baseball moving forward?
Okay. I would say, from kind of going back to your point about back in the day, it was like the teams versus the teams, you know, like the best teams versus the best teams. I would like to see some of these, you know, major tournaments that have got 400 teams in it, chop them in half, you know, or let's take the best, let's rank them. Let's take your best 100 teams. I'm just whatever. The best 100 teams, put them in a tournament. And then, hey, I get it, man. Like, you've got payroll, you've got investors, you got all this stuff you got to pay for. Put everybody else in another pool, you know, the other 350 teams. Let those guys go play for another championship. But like, I think it would be really good to play, you know, put the best teams together. I mean, there's obviously a ton of stuff as far as like safety and things like that. You've got these rules in youth baseball that allows these young coaches, and they don't know any better for the most part. I mean, I'm not knocking them, but they just abuse the hell out of these kids when they throw them 3-4 innings on Saturday. But as long as they keep their pitch count where it's supposed to be, then they'll throw them again 3-4 innings on Sunday. And I think, you know, remember the day it was like, oh, don't throw curveballs or sliders. That's not the problem. Right. You know, throwing a dozen curveballs in a game is not the problem. It's throwing, you know, 45 pitches on Saturday and throwing, you know, 60 pitches on Sunday every week. And that stuff adds up, you know, and especially these kids who hang out with these same coaches who are mostly parents, you know, for years, they all got arm problems. So I would love to see, you know, I know we're getting a little bit smarter with the pitch count stuff and people are paying more attention to that, but, I would love to see more young coaches, and if they're parents or whatever of these younger kids, get more educated. I know it's baseball, so people think I play baseball, you know, I already know it, man. It's so much bigger, you know, than like what you knew when you played baseball today. And a lot of these kids have got such bright futures ahead of them. You know, all of them, their best baseball is ahead of them. So we do want to take care of these guys, you know, and continue to make it fun, keep them safe, you know, so they can play baseball for a long time.
Well, Andy, I want to say thank you for sharing all of these tremendous insights and being able to share information. And for parents, you know, it's really important for you to hear the message that Andy shared with us today as far as development, being part of a team, being part of a program. It's very, very different than it used to be, but yet, you know, on the horizon, there will be some changes, both at the travel level, but more importantly, at the collegiate level, that will continue to make the sport bigger and hopefully better. Andy, thank you so much, and best of luck this upcoming season and beyond.
Hey, appreciate it, Walter. Thanks for the opportunity.
You're very, very welcome.